Thank you, thank you, thank you. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan, Kansas. As we gather in this tremendous rain, we are so glad for this sanctuary, right? The wonder of this moment, how it spans the smallest details of our lives with the infinite. From the moment of our conception, our birth, to now. May we be grateful for our mothers. This Sunday is just one day to call out all the various ways you love and nurture every day. So happy Mother's Day to everyone. Let us enter this circle of love and justice, and may it bring its gifts of puzzlement, the necessary courage to take risks, to dream big and experience awe. It is eternity now. We are in the midst of it. There are times when our own light goes out and it is rekindled by a spark from another person, the music from a band, the flowing creek, the perky wren. Each of us has cause to think with deep gratitude of all the people and small wonders that continue to rekindle the flame within us. So let us stand as you are able and sing our opening hymn 138, These Things Shall Be. I call your attention to the announcements in our order of service, and I don't see Katie Kingery Page. Maybe the rain is keeping her in her car. But are there any people from the search committee here? Okay, great. So I think there will be more by the end of the service, I hope, but if not, if you would like to ask some questions about the search process, we have a candidate in the wings who we feel very, very excited about, but we can't give you any details, but you can ask about the process. All right, and now, Ours is a welcoming community where we find connection, a loving community where we find meaning. Ours is a sharing community where our joys are amplified, a caring community where our sorrows are lessened. We take this moment to reflect on the joys and sorrows and acknowledge the mutual support of our community. If you have a brief personal joy or sorrow, this is the time to share it. And I would like to share that I have an entire row of my family here today. So thank you.
Good morning, Slavomir Dobzhansky. I just have two brief announcements. My personal joys. My first personal joy is that my husband Deepak will be joining the College of Education as a full-time faculty member in August. You can get up. And the second joy is that I just became a United States citizen last Friday, and so.
Hi, Linda Krager. My joy is that my husband's here along with a good portion of the Red States Blues Band, plus Matt Campbell, so I'm glad they're all here.
Michaela will be singing with the K-State Grand Choir at the Kauffman Center later this afternoon.
Katie is here.
Yeah. Katie, I made the announcement. So, but Katie's is also here. You want to stand up so people can, if you want to talk to her about the process, she's another one to go to. All right, good. And it is a joy.
All right, I think we have one more joy here.
All right, let's go for it. Oh, my God, Justice, all right.
My name is Justice Becker, and my joy is that my mom is singing in the Red State Blues Band.
All right, good job. All right, okay, any more? May we remember those who have spoken, those they have named, the joys and the sorrows, the great kind of things that come together, and those that stick in our heart like a thorn. May we be mindful and treat each other with compassion and the tenderness we each deserve. All right. Sandy.
I think so. I'm making up the story as we go. I mean, I'm reading a book, so we should. My joy is actually that we walked in this morning and the woman, Jessica, who usually is in the nursery, wasn't here, and I haven't heard from her, and I was able to just say, Lily, would you go do that? And she did. Good morning. This morning we are going to sort of read this story called Leo, the Late Bloomer. And I'm going to juggle things. Will you help me remember to take this when we go? Did I know? Leo couldn't do anything. He was nothing. There was nothing for him. He couldn't read. It was just empty when he opened the pages of the book. There was nothing there. Nothing. I guess that means that the other people could read. Nothing. He couldn't write. Nothing. Nothing came onto the page for him. Nothing. He couldn't draw. Nothing. Emptiness. Nothing came on the page for him. He was a sloppy eater. Nothing went into his mouth. Nothing. And he never, ever said a word. Nothing. "What's the matter with Leo?" asked Leo's father. "Nothing," said Leo's mother. "Leo is just a late bloomer." "Better late than never," thought Leo's father. Every day, Leo's father watched him for signs of blooming. You see him in there? Oh, I see him. And every night, Leo's father watched him for signs of blooming. Leo thinks Leo's father is very tired. It's all day and all night. "Are you sure Leo's a bloomer?" asked Leo's father. "Patience," said Leo's mother. "A watched bloomer doesn't bloom." So Leo's father watched television instead of Leo. Doesn't really look like he's watching television, does it? The snows came. Leo's father wasn't watching, but Leo still wasn't blooming. Nothing. There was nothing. The snow stick. Oh, yeah, I like the sticks. The trees budded. Leo's father wasn't watching, but still, Leo wasn't blooming. That's a lot of rain. Then one day, in his own good time, Leo bloomed from nothing. Suddenly, there was something in Leo. This is really hard to do. He could read. From nothing, he could read. From nothing, he could write. That his name, like with three pencils. Or a branch? I don't even know what that is. From nothing, he could draw. From nothing, he got food in his mouth. He also spoke. And it wasn't just a single word. It was a whole sentence. And from nothing, that sentence was, "I made it." He did it. From nothing, he became something. Fierce. We're done.
Go with you. Oh, in joy our hearts go to learn in love and grow in wisdom. Shine your light in all you do. All right. Success. Now we have our Helping Hands offertory, and today it's for the Boys and Girls Club of Manhattan. We do this once a month, and so if you would like to help this incredible organization, which Kelly Carmody is going to come up and tell you all about, please donate generously.
Well, as you said, I'm Kelly Carmody, and I am the Director of Programs and Training at the Boys and Girls Club. And so if you guys know very much about the Boys and Girls Club, I saw a few of our kids in this program here. We are funded 62% by grants, and that's a horrible position to be in. So in the next 2 years, we have a $300,000 deficit, but our population keeps on growing. So we have 9 sites here in Manhattan, and we just opened a site in Wamego. We serve 2,000 kids in the Manhattan area. We've added some literacy components to our program, and this summer we have a very exciting summer. This is my son. He is a product of Boys and Girls Club, too. We're doing a special needs camp called Project Child, and it stands for children helping, or the club helping individuals with learning difficulties. So before I came on, there wasn't anything for special needs kids, but I'm a special ed teacher for many years, and I'm a therapeutic foster parent of special needs kids. And I said, hey, there's parents need help. We need to do this. So it's our first summer opening that. So the funds today will help with that, because obviously we need licensed teachers to help with that program. And our ratio has to be lower. So we accept any generous donation you can do. We love the community and the support that we get for Boys and Girls Club. And if you don't have anything to do tonight, I am opening a nonprofit for kids in the foster care system, and we're having free tacos at the bistro, and it's called Tandem, so you should check that out too. Okay? Thank you so much, and happy Mother's Day.
Thank you.
The Tao is called the Great Mother, empty yet inexhaustible. It gives birth to infinite worlds. It is always present with you. You can use it any way you want. To extend the mind and heart beyond what can be seen and felt, the senses beyond normal sensing. Our universe is incredibly huge, billions of galaxies with billions of stars and planets, but the entire multiverse, multiple universes, may be staggeringly more immense than we can imagine. When looking out of the Milky Way, just imagine that you're right in the center of that great swath of stars. You're looking out of the Milky Way galaxy in the direction of the Hercules cluster. We see more galaxies beyond the Milky Way. There are more galaxies in the universe than the stars within the Milky Way galaxy. Most of what you see there, here, as you imagine it, are not stars, but galaxies with lots of stars. The number of external galaxies beyond the Milky Way is at least in the thousands of millions, and who knows how many more. A staggering immensity, beyond my experience to even begin to comprehend. But that's what we're asked to do. To comprehend the incredible immensity of this life that we're a part of. And every true religion, there is a tension between awe and humility. When you're looking at that vast Milky Way in the Flint Hills, when there are no other lights around, and you look up and you are taken in and you are taken out, and you just cannot do anything but go, wow, wow, what a gift. And then sometimes it makes you feel so small, so insignificant in the immensity of this great universe, this great cosmos. But we're asked as Unitarian Universalists to seek meaning, to make our lives a quest for meaning. And it's always small versus the infinite, the little details that must be taken care of, and those big things that just bring joy and uplift and make everything feel possible. But it's that balancing, that wonderful art. And then there's that academic itch to understand everything. Ooh, just scratch it, scratch it, scratch it, scratch it. And poets yearning for the mystery not to be explained, squeezed into an equation. But there is delight in both, that tension. Unitarian Universalism asks us to seek meaning in the midst of the smallest, most tiny thing that we can't even see or imagine, and the largest, holding that tension inside. How much room do you have for paradox in your lives? That's what this whole issue asks us to consider. How do you handle both sides? How do you pull it together and allow it to be something that enables you to live fully? People often associate nothingness with meaninglessness. And I know everyone here has had moments when you have felt like nothing, when you've been shamed, or you've lost someone that is so dear to you, or some dream that you have just given everything to has failed, and you just feel so empty, so bereft. So we have that tension as well. I have, over the last couple years, developed a practice that I call cosmic consciousness. And I have brought two candles here. One is from Sweden, and I call that my ancestor candle. And the other one is from Costa Rica, so we have the southern hemisphere. And when I light the ancestor candle, I say, thank you for all the generations and generations and generations of my family that have brought me to this moment. To go deep inside and really find a place where I can say, thank you. Thank you, Mom. Thank you, Grandma. Thank you, Grandpa. And then to thank all the things that make it possible for me to be sitting in a chair looking out over the Flint Hills. So then I light the light from the ancestor candle to the light of the day, bringing all of that richness of my history, of our history, the history of human beings, the history of the universe into the light of today. So I'll do that now. And some of you will recognize these candles because you have held them. These are the candles that were left over after we blew them out on Christmas Eve, when we all made our wish and put them into the big cauldron saying, this is what I'd like in the coming year. So every time I light these candles, I think of those wishes, the little ones and the big ones and the in-between ones. Every time I touch that candle, I am touching all of those wishes. And they're lifting up somehow, and they're percolating through me. And I see them emanate out into the greening fields, the big oak trees, and this oak tree with its 5 million root hairs that hold it in place. So there's this incredible vastness that I get in touch with as I begin to imagine the sun and how it creates the greening of the world and the rain and the wind and the earth and then the stars and the galaxies. And all of a sudden, all the little stuff that has interfered, you know, like, why did that person say that to me? It's really not worth spending a lot of time on. Letting go of those small irritants so that we can be in the big sweep of things, but also to concentrate them into the delicate tenderness that is communicated between one person and another when they're truly listening and when they're truly present. So these candles and this practice, as absurd and as wild or mundane as it may seem to you, keeps me grounded, and yet it takes me outside of myself twice a day when I do it twice a day, which I try to do twice a day because I get mired in little funky details all the time. So I need this practice. I need this practice of learning how to live in right relationship with the person I am married to. And that takes work. Right? It takes work, and it takes illumination, and it takes inspiration. And so one of the great joys I have is finally, after 10 years of trial, saying, I would like to do a service on the theory of nothing, I said, it's now or never. So it is with really humble and great pleasure that I await what you have to say, Chuck.
I'm going to talk about a concept, a word also that we call nothing. Maybe you've had these conversations. What is this Unitarian Universalism anyway? What do they stand for? They got no creed. They let anybody in. They're really pretty much nothing, aren't they, as far as a religion? Or this one. How did the universe begin? How can something come from nothing? Or this one. What is this feeling of nothingness I have? This feeling of worthlessness, that no one cares if I exist. Why does it hurt so bad? Why can't I make it stop? Nothing, religiously speaking, in the creation stories is interesting to look at. Genesis, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, which means God pre-existed everything else. So God came from nothing. At some point, you'd think there had to have been nothing somewhere, and somehow God came to exist. In the Enuma Elish, an older text, a Sumerian ancient text, they say that in the beginning, I actually have the quote here. When in the heights, heaven was not named, and the earth beneath did not yet bear a name, and the primeval Apsu who begat them, and chaos, Tiamut, the mother of them both, their waters were mingled together. That's their creation myth. I'm not going to call it a myth. The creation spirituality. So there you have naming something brings it in to existence. And they're very important about that. And you have this combat between form and chaos. So that's another way to do it. The Tao is another way, as Michael said, and I have no reason to repeat that, that it always is, always was, that you're in the stream of the Tao. But for me, I get down to religiously to one place, and that is ultimately God, if there is a God, created itself from nothing. Nothing had to have been the first state. And how can this be? In science, the big question is also, how can something come from nothing? You get this Big Bang theory, and at some point you end up with this irreducible something that is infinitely dense, infinitely dense. You have to watch that word, infinitely, anytime it's used. But that's the theory, infinitely dense. But we have a second kind of thing, so that you could have something else come from that theory. I mean, it could go somewhere else. It's a consistent theory with Big Bang physics, so I'm told. But how long will we keep thinking that we found nothing? For the air was once thought of as nothing except when the wind blew. The space between atoms was thought of as nothing. The space between subatomic particles is thought of as nothing. The space at the end of our ability to see with our wonderful telescopes, where it appears that the galaxies and clusters and superclusters of galaxies end. Beyond that, we think of nothing even now. There's always seemed to be a new frontier, and nothing often seems to be where it's at. So that's how it is. I mean, we keep thinking we found what is nothing, and we found a new frontier in science or religion or in words, and then we fall and find that the ball has been deflated. And who can do anything about that? I don't know. But the main thing I want to talk about is the more personal way of looking at this term. That feeling that Viktor Frankl, the wonderful psychiatrist who founded, as much as you can find something, a type of therapy called logotherapy. after having been through this horrible Holocaust. He was in the he was in a concentration camp during World War II. And he wrote a book, and it's just a magnificent book. I mean, it's just got so much in it. And I think he comes to the point of suggesting that when people have this great cosmic fear, when they have this hole in them that no comforts can fill, when their every day seems like hard work and nothing can make them feel better, that question is sometimes treated as a mental illness question, but instead it's a spiritual question and needs to be addressed on that basis. And not an uncommon does it turn out that way. He found that in answering the question, which he had to answer all during his life, how did you make it through the concentration camps? I mean, a lot of people gave up, and brave, courageous people just gave up at the brutality and the disasters that they kept seeing in the concentration camps. A strength where you were a number, your name was taken away, you were just a number. And he thought about that, and he said, I was writing on this thing I wanted to call the logotherapy. I wanted to write about this. And they'd take away all the stuff I wrote and throw it away, and I'd start writing again. And that feeling of having something to do, of a meaning in life, that's what kept him going. And he thinks a lot of times that's what keeps other people going, is to find a meaning. It could be your kids. It could be some theory. It could be almost anything that you find meaning in that carries you further. So what I think you end up with is that there's potentialities in life, that in this life of a person who feels terrible and hopeless, and that inside that life there's this potentiality. It's just kind of like the potentiality that you find in the term nothing. Inside the term nothing had to have been the potential for a whole universe. Inside a person who feels as if they are nothing is the potential of a person who can have a healthy spiritual life. Nothing is a strange term, and it goes all different places. You cannot be replaced. Your life cannot be repeated by somebody else. You have potential unknown to you. Look for it. It's been said in a spiritual context that God preserves all of our tears. And lives are not quantifiable. You save seven lives, you save one life. The numbers don't matter. You walk, ran into the burning building. You have $2 billion or you have debts. It really doesn't make any difference as so far as whether you love your parents or whether your parents love you or whether you have helped somebody today, whether you looked into somebody's eyes deeply and stopped and listened to them when they said, well, I'm fine, and asked that next question that made them think somebody might care. Did you comfort the afflicted? Save a life by your breath. Care about someone everyone else hates. Forgive something. Suffering, from what I read from Viktor Frankl's book, may abate when you sacrifice. And all of this is beyond words, beyond normal words. I mean, I'm just going around the edge of it. Thanks for the water. But I've been talking about a word, right? I mean, ultimately, that's what we end up talking about, the term nothing. And words, I think, have penumbras. First of all, when I say nothing, it has multiple meanings. But let's say it's in a word like butterfly. Well, it's actually hard to find any word without multiple meanings. Chair. All right, so that has a different concept in the listener than it does in the speaker. So you have to have some more words to help make sure that you're in the same general area. There's this wonderful quote. I don't know if I have it here. I can talk about it. Heisenberg, the magnificent physicist, quantum quotes of his are around. He said, you've gotten to the place in which people working science are at a place where they are symbols and other kinds of parables that have to be used to explain something, that you're beyond definition. And you need something else to explain this, like a Tao, I guess. It's almost really beyond definition. When you read those discussions of what the Tao is, you're going all over the place because the world is vast. Oh, here's Heisenberg. Quantum theory provides us with a striking illustration of the fact that we can fully understand a connection, though we can only speak of it in images and parables. Written in German, probably, but that's the translation. Because the future is unmeasurable. People who look like they were nobodies end up being Einstein. The old patent clerk in the Swiss office. A patent clerk with a PhD, but still a patent clerk. Or a mathematician by the name of Zhang, who has spent his whole career as a part-time calculus teacher at the University of New Hampshire. And recently, in a New Yorker article I read, had issued a proof that had missed everybody for many, many, many years and did not look to be provable. And he sat there and walked around and thought about it and had his part-time position and came up with a proof that is just a great thing in mathematicians that I can't otherwise explain. All right, so this whole thing began. I was in a car with three ministers. We were on our way to Bryant's to get some barbecue. And we had this conversation. These ministers is going, what is the deal here? I talked to these ministers from other faiths and I tried to explain what Unitarian Universalism is, and they say that's nothing. What is that? And so I thought about that. And I came to the conclusion that life is flexible, that ideas come from soft places. That's why people sleep on things. That Unitarian Universalism is creedless, impossible to contain, beyond heresy. It dares to be nothing. I think that's all I need to say. Thank you.
well, I have nothing left to say either, I guess. Oh, I love that, how the universe does this to me. But anyway, here we are. And I would like all of us, if we could, just take a moment to think about those things which put us in a place of feeling the infinite wonder of our existence. Oh, here it is. All right, great, thank you. So what does it mean for you when I say it is eternity now? How do you experience that in your everyday life? This is a time of sharing, so if you have something that bubbles up or is just kind of like residue, share it. Now.
Anybody?
Larry.
Oh, Chuck, I love that. That was delightful. When you mentioned the Sumerians, though, I thought you were going to say one of my favorites. Maybe it comes from India or something. Then even nothingness was not, nor existence. There was no air then, nor earth beneath it, and so it goes for a while, and then finally it comes down to, but after all, the gods themselves are later than creation, so who can truly say how it all began and how creation happened? Okay.
No wonder. Diane.
I have no idea what I was going to say. Hi. Well, who can truly say? Well, of course, no one really can say, and that's why we have so many amazing, wonderful myths and stories, and it's great to just think of the amazing human imagination that goes into the thousands of creation myths that try to explain the totally unexplainable. And then the only other thing is that if you really stop and think, if you really stop and think, all we ever have is the present moment. All that anyone has ever had is the present moment. The past is in memory, and it doesn't exist anymore, and the future obviously hasn't happened yet, so here we are, and we always are, right here, right now.
Yeah, when you're confronted with nothing, you really don't know what you're going to say, and I think, though, Chuck, thank you so much, because to me, the nothing is the great mystery that gives the space for anything to happen, anything at all, whether it's God or whatever. And for me, the nothing moment came today when I checked a bluebird's nest, and I've thought about being in a battle with the house sparrows and the bluebirds, because I saw a video where the house sparrows can sometimes go into the nest box and kill the babies and the parents, and, you know, it's like, I'm going to get involved in this big battle. So I checked out a nest, and I just, at the box, and I touched it, and whoosh, out flew a bird. So I watched, and sure enough, it was a house sparrow. So I took the box down, and I tipped it a little bit, and four baby birds rolled, you know, so I could see them. So I gently rolled them back, and the nothing came to me that I'm free on the earth to make any decision that I want to, so I decided not to hate the house sparrows. But see, to me, that's the connection to nothing, of saying, gosh, there are all these live things, and how am I going to connect with every person in every moment? And so I rolled the babies back into place and put the box back up. So that's it.
Many years ago, when our kids were in school,
we were sitting around quietly. One of them was sitting there doing her homework. The rest of us were reading. And suddenly she said, uncharacteristically, she said, "Oh, I just discovered zero." And I was startled and I said, "What?" And she said, "Oh, nothing."
That's perfect.
Chuck, I love what you said about the idea that something amazing can come from nothing, whether it's the earth or God or a solution to a formula, and that, you know, we all have this. I love the idea that we all have this untapped potential, and we all have this untapped energy, and we might be doing our best, or we might feel like we're nothing, or we're doing something terrible, or we just can't get out of bed, but I love the idea that it's there. There's this sort of ball of energy inside us, and I try not to get bogged down by that, because you can also feel really unproductive if you're not tapping into that, right? So, but I'm just trying to hold on to that excitement that it's there, and it's there in all of us.
Well, it takes some courage to deal with this subject, and I think Charles did a wonderful job of taking the science, at least the parts that we all can understand, and bring it down to a point where it makes sense in terms of our everyday lives. I guess what I want to say is that mostly we are defeated by time because our lives are very short, they're finite, and our awareness within this universe is very short, yet we are constantly dealing with big numbers that involve time. For example, it's pretty well known that the Big Bang happened 13.72 billion years ago. And in this week's science page of the New York Times, they had photographs of a proto-galaxy, a galaxy discovered by the Hubble telescope that lies 14 billion light years beyond us. But it's significant because suns were first igniting, and we see a process out there that probably led to who we are and where we are and so forth. But when it all comes down to the discussions of the initiation, where we talk about Planck time, which is 10 to the minus 27 seconds, a very significant factor in the beginning, and then we talk about 14 billion light years away, all you can really do is come down like Charles has done and say, okay, I guess I'll just have to try to make sense of it all within myself and within the context of where I am and what I understand. I'm a believer in the existence of the finite, trained as a scientist, dealing with the nature of matter. I mean, matter is real. You can see it, you can feel it, you can deal with it. Yet when you try to talk about origins, then you begin thinking more magically about virtuality, that it all began because when enough virtual particles, which don't really exist, got together to form the singularity that resulted in us. Well, that's enough.
It's kind of like the fellowship.
Yeah, and anyway, Chuck has it nailed.
Right.
That's all I can say.
Stacy?
Maybe I'm thinking of this because it's Mother's Day. My first relationship was really based on nothing. And nothing really, you know, emotionally came from that relationship, but from nothing came everything because it resulted in the birth of my child. And I understand the science behind it, and I'm still in awe of thinking about how a thoughtless act on my part could have created something that bore so much importance in my life. And sometimes I think I need to stop saying why or how, but instead I just need to say thanks.
Yeah. Deepak.
Thank you. I'm an educator. My husband's an educator. We have a lot of educators in here. And one of the big crises we are facing as a society right now is the student loan, the student debt crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we all have students that we care for who are starting out their lives hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. So they're starting out their lives like so deep in the hole and with such negative net worth that even getting to zero is kind of like, you know, half their lives will be over before they even get to zero. And these debts are not dischargeable in bankruptcy. George W. Bush took care of that. So my question is like, you know, when you are actually, when you're starting your life out of the negative net worth, that's almost like being less than nothing. Except that it's not really nothing because this debt is for real.
That's
and
right.
It's going to haunt you for the rest of your life, and there's people are going to come after you and everything you have because you are less than nothing. So it's an interesting thought that we just had about, like, you know, okay, so we talk about nothingness, but what about this entire spectrum of less than nothing that so many of our new generation is facing right now? And how do you intellectually and spiritually grapple with that? How do you grapple with being in a society where young people are starting out being less than nothing, like significantly less than nothing?
Word. Well, I just have a quote in my head by the German writer Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, who said, "Ich weiß, dass wir nichts wissen können, das will mir schier das Herz verbrennen. I know that we cannot know anything, and that's burning up my heart."
Oh, great quote. Great quote. Well, I think an answer to Deepak's, I usually don't do this, but I will try to provide a answer for anybody who has more than they need. Donating money to your alma mater for student scholarships is just a tremendous way to use what wealth you have been able to get after you were worth less than nothing at one point in your life. So generosity, I think, is a real key to dealing with nothingness and even below nothingness. So I would like to close the sharing session. Thanks, everyone, for your insights and what you have said with this quote from the Tao: "Seeing into darkness is clarity. Knowing how to yield is strength. Use your own light and return to the source of light. This is called practicing eternity." Let us now sing our closing hymn, and then we are going to have marvelous music again by the Red State Blues Band with Matt Campbell sitting in on drums. So, hey, thanks a lot for coming and sharing your wonderful music. So let us stand as you are able and sing "A Fierce Unrest" as the thunder and the rain and the wind is moving all about.
Shaken since
Go into this day with joy and lots of rhythm.